Welcome to Shadows from the Tree, the podcast that invites you to explore the curious world of dark genealogy, uncovering secrets, scandals, crimes, and darker events that shape family trees. Whether you're a seasoned genealogist, just beginning to explore your family history, a history buff, or even a crime junkie, we offer something for everyone. Join us, your hosts, Danielle and Michelle, in each episode as we share stories from over a century ago for the first time with each other, centered around a common theme. By using newspaper archives as our guide and conducting research using historical records, we piece together these often forgotten stories and gain a deeper understanding of the challenges those involved faced. Our hope is to connect you, our listeners, with your ancestors' past, one story at a time. Here we are.
Welcome back.
This week, theme is revenge. And I really enjoyed this one, I would say.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to go first this week. And so I worked to unravel a headline that hooked me from the beginning. It was from the Journal and Courier of Lafayette, Indiana. It was written on June 25th, 1902. And the headline was "New Form of Revenge. Wade Murphy Intentionally Exposes Sister's Family to Smallpox."
Oh, jeez.
Yes. And it's a story that starts with smallpox, and through my research, it ends with murder, but not in the way that you're probably initially thinking.
Oh my gosh. Here we go.
Yes, here we go. So this one was kind of a thrill. It was really a lot of like ups and downs. And I selected the article because when I was looking, it was kind of like unexpected. I was envisioning like gunfights and I don't know. I just think revenge, I thought violence for some reason. Right. And I saw, oh, this is, you know, this is different. So I always know I'm hooked after I read something, and then like the questions in my head are like, well, what happened to this? Well, what, you know, so the questions were flowing and I was like, yeah, this is the one for me. So I'm going to read it because it's short. So it says, Marin, Indiana, June 25th, Wade Murphy, an oil well driller of this city who had smallpox, escaped quarantine and went to the home of his brother-in-law, Noah Kreps, near Bluffington, against whom he had a grievance, exposed the family to the disease, and then went to Van Buren, where he was cared for by health officials. Six of the Kreps family and three members of the family of James Murphy, a neighbor, now have the disease and are in quarantine. Wade Murphy wrote a letter to his brother-in-law telling him of his scheme for revenge when he learned the family had taken the disease.
Wow. That's interesting. It's pretty spiteful. Like, what caused it? Why did he do that?
Those were some of my questions. I'm like, what type of person would do this? Who is this guy? And then I was like, did the family like seriously get ill? Like, some people die from smallpox at that time.
A lot of people do.
And then I'm thinking, if this is the wife's family, how would you as a wife move forward with your husband after this?
No,
you know? And then your point, like, what revenge is there to get that?
Yeah, why is it that it's like the whole family, not just the one person you have a problem with?
Exactly. So I started typing keywords for articles in the different newspapers and just looking for anything offering any new information. Although I didn't really turn up a lot of new details, they all kind of were similar. I did enjoy some of the different headlines that were like, gives plague as revenge, all for revenge, communicates disease to people he dislikes, and there even was a headline called "The Meanest Man Yet." So it was definitely interesting. So from there, I used information and I created a tree in ancestry and started looking up the historical records to follow any kind of breadcrumb I could to piece it together. And so here's what I know. So we have Wade Hampton Murphy, who was born in Indiana, August 16, 1876, to the parents of Josiah, which also was referred to as Joseph, and Nancy Jane, maiden named Garrett. And as the family grew, he became the oldest child of six. So he had siblings. They were named Charles, Mary, Irvin, Harry, and Ellis. Which I actually really like Ellis. Yeah. When I read that, I was like, oh, that's cool. So he was listed as part of the Company E 160 Indiana Infantry during the Spanish-American War. So as he got older, the company was mustered on May 12, 1898 and mustered out April 29th of 1899. So I start to kind of get a picture of this guy because I see a few articles that were in the Bluffton Chronicles, one from July 13, 1898, which says, Wade Murphy, the man who shot himself, was sent to Fort Thomas the other day. And then it says, a few years ago, January 1904, an article was written in the same newspaper saying that he was an oil well driller and he was bent on thrashing somebody, a guy, I guess, Jesse Wessner. There's this article written about how he wanted to go get him for something. I don't know why, but and then it mentions the same accident saying Murphy's the man who was a member of the 160th Regiment, shot himself in the foot so he could get a pension.
Oh, okay.
So he's developing a little bit of a
trend here.
Yes. So like, okay. And just to sort of like give a picture, because you know I like it, Ancestry did have a family photo. And so Wade is top left. That's a okay. younger version
yeah,
of him.
Yeah, he was very young.
So before he had to go out to the...
Before the dark turn.
Yes, before things got a little wild. So that is that story. So then we move on. November 20th, 1898, at the age of 22, Wade marries an M. Minnie Reynolds, the young 17-year-old daughter of Wesley and Mary Higman Reynolds in Indiana. So the marriage certificate that I found shows that it's the first marriage for both of them. And I did find a November 23rd, 1898 newspaper clipping from Bluffton Chronicles that said, at Liberty Center Sunday occurred the wedding of Wade Hampton Murphy and Miss Minnie Reynolds, the affair taking place at the home of the bride's uncle, W.C. Arnold, trustees of Liberty Township. The groom is a late member of Company E who had been sent home since early in the war on furlough.
I wonder why.
He and his wife will make their home temporarily at Liberty Center. So, yes, he was furloughed due to probably shooting his foot and not being able to carry on. So him and Minnie show up in the 1900 census when they now have their first daughter, Helen, who was born October 15th, 1899, and they were living in Blackford, Indiana. And all these places like Bluffton and Lincoln Center, they all seem to be within like 30 minutes, kind of. Yeah. So they're close. And Wade is listed at that time as working as an oil well driller, which only is just making me feel more confident that the person in the story is then this person. You know, yeah. I have all the details coming together.
It's clicking in.
It's yeah. clicking, yeah. So they're married. They have their daughter in 1900. And then that's when the incident of smallpox happened next in 1902. But I thought it was important to mention that in the 1900 census, the Krebs, who we gave the disease
infected,
to
yeah.
infected yeah in that family was Noah, the husband, Maddie, his wife, also Minnie's sister,
okay,
Oliver, who was 7, Leola, who was 5, and Vera, who was 2. So 2 years later, their children getting, you know, so not only just the husband, it's like little children. Shakes my head.
Disturbing.
So my one question I had about, like, did anyone get ill and pass away from the disease? I was able to track the 1900 census and the 1910, because there's, like, the little column that says how many children did you give birth to and how many are living.
Yeah.
So it did appear that they had a child who must have passed before 1900, because there was one child listed as not living. But then in 1910, all of the children that had been recorded were living. So
oh, okay.
So
I was like, oh, no.
So I feel good that they all made it through this smallpox.
Scared me there for a minute.
Yes.
You scared me.
They all made it through. And I believe my quick search, they all made it through adulthood and so on. So but we do have some tragic news, because in 1904, little Helen, who's Wade and Minnie's daughter, passes away on January 15th, 1904. With the death being listed as pericarditis, which is the inflammation of the sac that surrounds the heart. Mm-hmm. So she was 4 years old. Mm. So very sad, very upsetting for them. Obviously, this is something that could make or break a marriage, or make it even worse after what she already,
infecting,
you know.
Her.
Yeah, exactly.
In-laws, you know.
Yeah. Gosh. So then like the stories just keep coming. So about 7 months after the passing of the daughter, I found a newspaper article from the Star Press in Muncie, Indiana. It was dated August 5th, 1904, and it was headlined, Miss Wade Murphy Cannot Be Found. I'm what? Like, is this my?
This is my
Miss Murphy? You know? So I keep reading. It's talking about Wesley Reynolds, which was listed on the marriage certificate. So it has to be connected.
Right.
And then I'll read it to you because it mentions then Noah Krepp. So I'm like, yep, this is definitely my person. So it says, efforts being made to notify her of killing of father at Kansas City. So Bluffington, Indiana, August 4th, relatives of Miss Wade Murphy have been trying to find her for several days to acquaint her with the news of the death of her father, Wesley Reynolds, at Kansas City, but have so far been unable to do so. A few days before the death of her father, she left the home of her sister, Miss Noah Krepps, south of the city, leaving her two-year-old child there, and they supposed that she would be gone for a few hours, but she did not return. Her father was shot and killed in Kansas City, where he was a sergeant of police, by Norman Roop.
Whoa.
Yes. A special officer of the Swift Packing Company, Roop, claims the shooting was accidental, but he is under arrest. So I'm like, dang, this is its own story in itself. So I got Father Wesley, sergeant.
Look at that mustache. That is cool.
I know. That's a cool photo. I'll have to post that one. So I'm like, okay. So now I'm going to go down the rabbit hole. I'm searching like this whole incident of what's happening.
Where did she go? Was she with the shooter? Like, what's happening? Yeah.
So Wesley was shot and killed August 2nd, 1904, at 54 years old during a strike at the Swift & Co. when he was attempting to disarm and arrest a watchman for the company who had just shot one of the strikers.
Whoa.
So
this is a lot to unpack.
Yeah. From there, I was like, Danielle, stick to the original story.
Where did she go? Let's find her.
So, but one last note, I found an article in the Robinson Index of Kansas, April 13, 1905, that Norman was convicted of manslaughter for the killing of Sergeant Wesley Reynolds and was on suicide watch at Wyandot, I might be saying that wrong, county jail. And he had attempted multiple attempts of suicide, and he was, you know, I didn't find out what happened to him. I tried searching, but I was like, I need to just stick to the story.
Focus,
I'm assuming he was in jail for a while and having a hard time dealing with that. So, but then the Bluffington Chronicles, again, loved that newspaper. It offered me a lot of good details. They wrote on August 10th, 1904, regarding his funeral, that the two daughters did not receive notice of the funeral in time to attend, and Miss Wade Murphy, who was reported missing, was located all right and received the word.
Oh.
She was in town Thursday afternoon and spent some time in the store of her cousin, J.R. Reynolds, and she went to the home of her sister, Miss Krepps, last night.
She's left her kid though,
yeah, so we'll get back to that. That's next. So, but then I'm thinking, okay, the husband infects the family with smallpox, but the sisters are still on good terms, it appears.
Yeah,
she's going to the house, so that's good.
Baby there, and
so then so I go to the article. I'm like, the first daughter had already passed and the dates don't match up. So then I find, like, I'm like, who's this two-year-old daughter? And she happened to be born between the censuses, which, you know, which is why I didn't show it that way. But I did find the grave, find a grave for it. And it was Mary Adeline Murphy, born September 11, 1902. And I found her on the 1910 census living with Wade's parents.
Mm.
Yes. So, but this kind of tracks because I found more newspaper articles from the Star Press. One was from March 21st, 1907, that Wade Hampton Murphy filed suit yesterday in circuit court against Miss Minnie Murphy for divorce. He alleges desertion. But do you blame her?
No.
No. So I didn't get to see, I couldn't find any like documents, divorce records or anything like that, but it's better off for her, in my opinion. So they get divorced. But then not long after that, in October of 1909, the Star Press headlines, farmer sued by girl, denounced as groundless. So it stated that Miss Minnie Reynolds alleged she was betrayed by James W. Davidson. She alleges that she met him in February of 1909, and from that time up until September 1909, he expressed love for her and showed her affection.
Uh-oh.
She made a
promises. That I know. She did not keep. I feel like yep. this is a common yep. thread.
Yep. She made a further assertion that he invited her to meet him in Muncie, Anderson, and Indianapolis, and that she left her home in Bluffton to meet him. The suit was for damages for $5,000 because by doing so, she had lost her standing in society.
Oh, wow.
And she also claimed to have suffered great mental and physical anguish. So I'm seeing
heart.
Yes. And I'm just seeing Minnie kind of depleting at this point. Her daughter's living with the husband's parents.
Right.
She's now divorced. And now.
Was the divorce before this guy?
The divorce was before this guy.
Okay.
So she probably was trying to move on and then right. got screwed by him.
Yep.
So I feel like she's just kind of going not making it.
Deeper and yeah. deeper into sadness.
Yes. Yeah. So I'll get back to that. Yes. Yeah. So then. The story is just
this family okay. is like it could have its own yes. documentary, really.
So then I tracked down a pension card on Ancestry, and I started noticing that it did say Hampton, Wade, Murphy, but it now had a second line underneath it that said Harry Lyle, now known as.
Oh, well, if you do bad enough stuff, I guess you gotta change your name.
Gotta change your name. So this guy. Change his name. The first filing listed on his card was for January 6, 1899, which tracks probably with his foot injury or whatever.
Yep.
And then again in February 23 of 1932. And now he has a widow named Netta Lyle. So start going down that track. And then I start to find a newspaper article that kind of starts linking this chapter of his life together.
Yep.
You ready? So this was February 17th, 1932 from the Muncie Evening Press. Murder victim changed name. So Lyle's true name given as Wade Murphy. So I'm like, oh, because for a while I was second guessing myself. Like, is this the right person? Yeah. Like, I don't really know.
The names are not similar.
Yeah. The real name, or at least the original name of Harry Lyle, who was killed by Arnold Johnson Sunday night in the shooting fray in which Miss Lyle killed Johnson, was Wade Murphy. It was learned Wednesday. Murphy, who was born and reared at Montpelier, changed his name to Harry Lyle a number of years ago, although he himself always contended that he had changed his name through the courts. No one apparently ever knew why. It is said he had his name changed while in the West. His mother, Miss Nancy Jane Murphy, connected to my info, of Jackson, Michigan, and his three brothers, Ellis Murphy of Jackson, Michigan, Irvin Murphy of near Coldwater, Michigan, and Harry Murphy of near Colon, Michigan, attended the funeral here Tuesday afternoon. Lyle had a number of more distant relatives in and around Muncie. They and friends knew him here when he had went under the name of Wade Murphy. So I got the brothers' names linking, so I'm like, this is definitely my guy.
Yep.
But I'm still just like, what happened? Because this is the first article I found. Like, so what? Why was there a shooting? So.
It's the Wild West.
I know. It's just so much happens. So much happens. So he reinvented himself. I see on the 1910 census that he's living as a son-in-law with Netta in Muncie, Indiana. And they're both showing a second marriage. Then again in 1920, they're in their own home. And he is listed as an oil driller. So all connecting the dots. So then I find, the next thing I think I found was like the death certificate filled out by Netta, and the birthday is the correct one, the August 16th. However, the father's name is listed as Joseph Lyle. And I'm like, did Netta know? Or was he feeding her these lies about this last name Lyle? Yeah, I don't know. It was weird. The cause of the death was a hemorrhage in one of the cavities from a gunshot wound in the right lung. So let me just read you some of the headlines of how he died. Are you ready for this?
Yes. Bring it on.
Two men slain in family row over a kitten. What? Two lose lives in kitten fight. Kitten slaying to be probed at Muncie.
That is not what I was expecting at all.
And I hate to laugh. Gosh. Death is not something we laugh about. But this is an old story, and it was nowhere near also where I was expecting to go.
I mean, I love cats.
Yeah. So the tragedy struck on Valentine's Day of 1932 when Harry's wife Nettie was trying to rescue their kitten from a neighbor's tree, and the drunken neighbor wasn't having it, so they got into an argument, and then in steps Harry, and the neighbor, who was armed, shot Harry dead.
Oh boy.
And then Netta, then in a tizzy, grabbed her revolver and killed the neighbor.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do, I guess.
So that all happened. So I didn't go down the rabbit hole. I started to pull some articles about Netta's whole journey. So I'm assuming she had to pay for what she did.
Yeah.
So there's still a little unresolved, issues I have with this story that I might still poke around with. But so that's how that one ended. But it's just kind of, I don't know what the right word is, like, you end up giving someone smallpox and then you end up dying over kitten. Like,
yeah.
If there's any sort of karma.
Karma might
I don't know.
You
I don't
time.
Know.
That time, buddy.
Yes.
Know.
So, but there is one question I still didn't answer as why? To why the revenge in the first place.
Why were the smallpox being spread around so freely?
Now that I discovered Harry, there was a find a grave on Harry listing a child, Rose, with the mother being Dora Benjamin. So if the dates are correct, again, I just was pulling this together at the end. So if the dates are correct and my theory is correct, Rose was born June 15th, 1902. The articles were written June 24th, 1902. And his second daughter, Adeline, was born September 11th, 1902. So my theory is that somehow Noah Kreps, that his family, maybe they found out and were trying to, they spread the word to Minnie, but that he had an affair and was now going to have a daughter, because that's literally a couple weeks after the daughter's born, the smallpox incident's happening. Or maybe they all found out and there was hard word. Maybe they found out a while ago and there was some tension brewing for a while. And then a couple months later, he gives birth to his daughter. So the half siblings are now only a couple months apart.
So it definitely couldn't have been the same mother.
Right.
Oof.
So that is the theory.
That makes sense.
You know? So I definitely wanted to keep poking around, but I did have to end there for my sanity.
That was a lot of revenge. More than one revenge.
I honestly did not expect those events. It was a little wild.
They came through me over the edge.
That was definitely not what I was expecting. So,
no.
Anyway, so that was my story. It was a fun one.
That is a good one. That was a lot of twists.
If anyone out there knows anything about Minnie, I'm assuming she must have just remarried and maybe went by a different name. I couldn't find anything else from her after.
Yeah.
And then the same with Adeline. Other than her find a grave, I couldn't really find if she was, where exactly she was living, she had a family.
I do love all the names. The names, I know, are really, really cute.
It brings you back, and I'm like, yeah. Oh, man. Anyone out there listening who's going to have a child in the future, just start writing these down so you have them. Always
classic names that are really fun.
Definitely. All right. Well, I'm interested to see what kind of revenge you got up to in your research.
Well, you know me. I just start typing in the newspapers.com to see if I can find a good headline. And I wanted, a lover's revenge story.
Ooh, okay, so yes.
I kept digging and digging, and this is the one that came up. So lover's revenge, here we go. So this is from the Chicago Herald, August 4th, 1890. So around the same time frame as you. So there's Claude Rosier's strange history. He learns that he is the long-lost son of a French duchess, and then he can inject de Saint-Alais into his name.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Is it going French?
It is very French, yes.
of Normandy. So Claude de Saint-Élise Rosaire is a newly acquired name under which a tall, debonair young fellow who lives modestly at 38 Ogden Place will go forth into the world to find his mother, with whom he never possessed a speaking acquaintance. Until yesterday, Mr. and Miss Rosaire have contrived to get along with only Claude as a preliminary name. At the time, he interjected his new name, De Saint-Élise, into this title, thus giving the lofty sound that rightly belonged to it. Claude is a handsome man. He's only 26, but those years more romance has been injected than in ordinary observed in this day and age.
Player?
Yeah, right. But it has been only the last 6 years that he has been gradually ascertaining who he is. Up at this time, he believed to be himself of a prominent judicial family in Michigan. His days had been spent in a village near Ann Arbor. George W. Was the first name and central initial of the man he thought was his father. So in other articles, they said that his father's name was George Latham, L-A-T-H-A-M. But in some articles, he was like protecting the identity. So further down the line, they just started using the guy's name. At our time, finding that person in Michigan, George Latham is a very kind of like just generic. I feel like a lot of people were named that. There was one in Nebraska on a census. We'll get to that.
Okay.
But Michigan, I couldn't find someone in Ann Arbor, but we'll get back to that. So we got George W. So he thought was his father, and he refused to disclose the final name for fear of leading to family unnecessary into the glare and gaze of publicity. But remember this date, October 6th.
Okay.
October 6th, 1884. This man told him he was illegitimate and not his son.
Oh.
And the lad of 20 went out into the world broken and undone. So he finally reached Chicago. So he kind of like,
I'm done. I got no family here. Yeah, whatever.
He was like, you don't want me? I'm not your kid. Okay, yeah. Whatever. You don't want me? I guess they were fighting about something and that came out. So he ended up in Chicago. His life ran along until last week in an ordinary, prosaic way. He was and is employed at Lanson Brothers and Company's number 6 Board of Trade and lives at 38 Ogden Place and incidentally gives public readings and elocutionary recitals.
Hmm.
Remember that. Okay. That's a key point. So he's outgoing, let's say.
Okay. Yeah. Not very shy.
You know, likes to be in the spotlight.
Yeah. Okay.
I've seen articles of advertisements for his shows he's doing with, he had gotten married to a woman named Julie.
Okay.
So in 1890, and that's when this came out, in 1890.
Okay.
So they both did these kind of like performances for crowds.
Okay.
Remember that. Okay. So he once delved into literature and wrote A Chicago Countess. Remember that too.
Okay.
But
my mom brain is like filling up real quickly.
I know. This is a long article, but I feel like you need to get all the details because I really, really tried to unpack this as a true story.
Okay.
I really tried. Okay. So he wrote A Chicago Countess, but he never had a thought of how stirring had been the incidents of the first 3 weeks of his existence until last Saturday. Then he received through the mail a huge, bulky envelope.
Ooh.
As he opened it, a long scroll written in French and a faded marriage license dropped from it. It came to him as a happy deliverer up to that time, and he said last night, I thought I had myself illegitimate, or at least since the revelation made to me by the man I supposed to be my father in Michigan one night 6 years ago. The marriage license was old and oddly fashioned, covered with large inflammatory roses, with oval blanks of pictures for the happy pair it bound together and reading thus. United in holy matrimony, Victoria de Saint-Élise of New Orleans, Louisiana, and Claude Hector Rosaire of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. According to the ordinance of God and laws of the state of Louisiana at New Orleans on the 6th day of October, 1863, to which I certify, and then there's a list of witnesses. So Louis Benevel, Tina Villot, and Martin Rogers. The bulky epistle that accompanied the old certificate told a story that was unveiled a mystery of his existence. It was dated Chicago, July 5th, 1890, although mailed a month later. It was written in French. Last night, the reporter for the Herald translated it, and it began this strange way. So who it says that anonymous letters are like garbage of the streets, compelling one turn of the nose and pass by. I write this letter with a contrite heart, yet with a great consolation of my conscience. The subject is a strange one, yet what is stranger than truth? I write this under the inspiration of the moment. Still, its composition is only a matter of a few months. Of my physician says I cannot live longer than that time.
Oh.
Well, 2 years ago, you recited at St. Luke's Hospital. Among the patients assembled in the foyer was myself. I had been searching for you for 2 years. First, you are legitimate. You are the child of marriage. I can keep the secret no longer because I cannot retain my life longer, and all human vengeance seems futile. Your grandmother was the Duchess of St. Elise of Normandy. Her marriage was very miserable, the Duke being known throughout Europe on account of his liaisons. After spending your grandmother's fortune, he commenced divorce proceedings against her. Having lost love and courage, the Duchess fled to America, taking with her her only child, a baby, your mother, Vittoria de St. Elise. Soon after the arrival in America, the Duchess entered the convent of the Ursulines at New Orleans, where she died 5 years later. So that was the grandmother passed away, okay, yeah. And then the daughter was still living there.
Yes. Yeah.
So the child, Victoria, was brought up under the care of the sisters until her 18th birthday, when her great talent for music caused the mother superior to allow her to choose between the world and the convent. She chose the former. Then she met and loved a Confederate soldier, Juan Claude Hector Rosaire. On the 6th of October, 1863, they were married. As you will see, their certificate, which I enclose. They immediately fled north into Canada. Now, this man, Rosaire, was not the only man who loved Victoria, but he was the only man she loved.
Ooh, that's okay.
That's important. I never forgave her for that, and followed them like a hunting dog.
Oh my gosh.
In May of the following year, you were born in Quebec. 3 weeks after your birth, I stole you.
What?
From your nurse.
What?
I took you to the south of Ontario among a colony of Canadian Quakers.
Wait, what?
Yep.
I'm still wrapping my head around it.
Yep.
Stealing the baby from the hospital.
Right. So that was important because she only loved Claude, but this other guy who's writing this was so pissed.
Wow, that he
followed them to Canada. All right, this is quite the story. So among the colony of Canadian Quakers, one Marguerite became your foster mother. No matter how I knew her, some women love strangely. Then I returned to Quebec to witness my vengeance. It arrived very quickly, but there was little satisfaction in it. Your father, crazed with grief at your loss, hurled himself from the head of the fort.
Oh my.
I waited for Victoria to follow, but she was made of iron. She came and went with a visage of bronze, and then strangely and mysteriously she disappeared. I have never been able to find any trace of her. I think she must have entered a convent, since its walls alone could elude my vengeance.
Jeez.
I'm like, or did he just kill her? Because this person right? He seems like a little unhinged. I have enjoyed watching you struggle.
What?
Knowing that it was it was useless, since my malediction rests upon the fruit of their marriage. I am a fool for lifting from your life the blot of illegitimacy. The letter goes on in a way, disclosing that Rosaire things that prove his strange and known correspondence has followed all his life. It was in an anonymous letter that after leaving Michigan home that he was told to call himself Rosaire. These two letters are all he ever received from this man who loved his mother. I care not for him, said Rosaire last night, but I shall find my mother. All my life, I'll devote to that now.
Aww.
Yesterday, he advertised for her in the Herald, and he proposes to follow the matter until he finds his mother. The hero of the above romance will appear at the Rogues Opera House next Monday evening, supported by MME, Julie Carol Rosaire. So that's his wife.
Yeah.
And in the program of the monologues and dramatic performances. Okay.
So first of all, you hit like deathbed confessions, you hit like love triangle, you hit like revenge.
I like a good combo story. A good combo. So, do we think it's real though? Like, he's writing stories about a countess. He's saying like all these things. I just have a hard time because everywhere I looked, there was no like documentation.
Did you ever find any, like, census records of this actual guy?
Yes. Yeah, he okay, does
so
exist.
He does exist.
Yes, Claude exists. I found the 1900 and 1910 census of Claude Rozier and his family. So there's Julie, and then they have children. And Esme actually, like, goes on. He's, like, he's well-known. I think he was a geophysicist something. So their children
did well.
There's actually passports of one of the children, like, traveling. Cool. I think they were in the service too. So their sons did accomplish. So these people do exist. Claude and Julie do exist.
What about George?
George had a hard time connecting. The only George I found with Claude in the census was in Nebraska.
And so who raised him?
The family in Michigan, he said.
Okay.
Raised him until he was like 20. And then they said, well, you're not.
I mean.
And then I just, like, rereading this, I was really kind of, I was like, well, he couldn't. This can't be real because he was using the name Rozier before 1890. Because then there's a voter registration in 1888 where he's at the same address, 38 Ogden Place, and he's calling himself Claude Rozier. And I was like,
this letter didn't come until.
Yeah, but this just said he had two letters. So there was another anonymous letter after leaving his Michigan home where he was told to call himself Rozier. So.
So that maybe he got first letter first?
Yeah. So I guess maybe that connected my dots because now that I reread it, because I was like, that's it. This morning I was like, that's fake. If 1888, he's already calling himself that.
But it's weird though, like the way the description of the letter, like someone was physically, tangibly holding this letter.
Yeah, holding the letter in French.
Right. So now it's just a matter of, is
this person. And the marriage certificate. Like they said it had like floral and it had people's names on it. And
I mean, what we've learned from deathbed confessions is that like they're typically pretty real because your last moment to share the truth.
Yeah. But I don't know if the guy just wrote it so that people would come to his show.
Or maybe he was still on, like, this revenge journey and just wanted to really mess with somebody.
Maybe.
But that was a lot to write.
I know, and there's details. There's, like, but the October 6th thing kills me, too, because, like, he was told on October 6th that he wasn't a legitimate child. And his parents happened to be married on October 6th. Is it just a coincidence? Is it just bad writing? Is it real?
Right.
Like, I don't know.
You found nothing ever in the future searching this.
No, I could not find them. I couldn't find the mom. I can't find the father. Like, I was looking in. I can't read French. So that's our first problem. So I'm trying to find in Ontario if there was somebody who, there's a Claude Rozier who killed himself. Like, sometimes, you know, that hits the paper. I'm like, that was not there.
I wonder, I know there's not much time, but like it'd be curious to say if you traced, did you like find his obituary or anything?
Which one?
The child, the one who was searching for Vera, the mom.
I did find.
And did he list?
No, he didn't list anything. It was just his children, basically.
Yeah, interesting. Because I wonder in my, like, my researching thought process, like if you traced the children of him.
Yeah.
What if, like, the grandma, I don't know, was old and, I don't know, ended up living with them? I'd just be curious if she popped up anywhere.
She was in a convent, I think. If she did exist,
she probably retired and told them.
So I was looking at that Ursuline convent to see if I could find, like, some kind of.
Did they show up? Did convents get recorded in censuses?
I didn't find them in a census. I think they have their own records because they report to the Pope. So I was looking in, they had like journal, like really good records, but it only had like the nuns' names.
Okay.
So, and then none of the Saint Elise, none of that showed up. So I'm like, I was looking at immigrations.
Oh my God.
I was like, if they come from France, they have to come over. Right. But did she use that name? Did she use a different name? But she must have used the name if that's how the man.
Well, the husband spent all the money too, so it's like.
And if it's on their certificate, that's the name.
What would be cool to find, again, you have the translation issue, is to find where in France there would be the actual digital copy of the marriage certificate. Just to prove that whatever he sent was real.
Well, they said they got married in New Orleans.
So, New Orleans. Oh, right.
Oh, I looked on New Orleans and it doesn't exist. because unless it's like just a church record and it wasn't on like the state, you know, sometimes there are different things.
And there was probably no birth record. Like I know.
Actually, I did. I found a French like database.
Oh.
That said that there was a Claude Rosaire who had a son named Claude Rosaire who was born in 1863, which was like.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So. But he said they were born in New Orleans. So I'm like, maybe he was born and then they went and then up they moved. To.
Yeah, could have.
Maybe the timeline was just a little blurry for this person. But it was in French and it had the names. So I'm like,
ooh, that could have been sounds. Something.
And the Claude Rosaire, that's not a common name. Like,
no.
I literally found one.
How did he spell Rosaire?
It's Rosaire.
Rosaire.
I'm probably saying it wrong, but. It's all good. My French meme would be very disappointed in my enunciations.
Wow, that's gonna
be
bothersome.
I mean, you know, it's just and they went on and they performed, but he was also like a stenographer. There were articles of him, like that was another business he did later in life, I guess. And
you, what you need to do is do you connect with anyone on Ancestry who had him in their tree? I'd be curious. This is where, like, we get into the whole folklore. Like, did they get told a story, like, the kids of him get told stories over time?
Yeah, because they did have, like, three sons and a daughter. So.
And so those generations probably carried around. So if you are out there and that name's in your tree, let us know.
And do you have the letter? Do you have?
That would be so cool to see that.
Do you have the certificate? I was like, I need a picture of that.
That would be so cool.
I need to see it in
French. Did you try? Because you have good luck finding like blogs and stuff. Did you go that route?
I looked a lot. Yeah. I spent a lot of time. Especially yesterday. I was like, I am going to correct this. But I'm glad I found that he knew to call himself because that was like totally throwing me off.
Yes.
I was like, if 2 years before he already knows his name is Rosaire, that doesn't make any sense. But I guess if he had gotten another anonymous letter because this person was tracking him his whole life, it's kind of creepy.
It is kind of creepy.
If you have a stalker from your mother's.
Because you're mad that your mom married, had a different love.
Jeez. People
we
really
need answers, people.
People really hold on to stuff.
Oh, yeah.
For, like, forever.
Till the end of their death.
Oh,
their,
my gosh. Their I'm just, I don't know. Like, if it is real, that is something.
Yeah, that hits all the.
And there's something else.
Yeah.
I really liked the story. I wanted to find the concrete
evidence.
I'm going to keep looking. I'm not giving up on this one yet. We could do a recap show of all the things
we found. The things we wanted to figure out. Well, that is awesome. I love that one. We have one more episode we're going to do this season.
Yep.
So looking forward to that. It's one that kind of ties in a little bit to our family story that we shared at the end of season one.
Yep, more local.
Yeah,
yep.
So we'll look forward to that. And yeah, that's about it. So just remember, it's not a matter of if you will find a shadow in your family tree, but when, because behind every family tree, there are shadows.
Thanks for listening.